This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You know, there was some big news late last night into the early morning in the Boston sports landscape, and it brought a thought to Scott's mind when he was trying to count sheep last night. So I'm going to throw it to you, Scott, and let you introduce what you've been thinking about the last 10, 12 hours.
Well, yeah. So obviously the big news is that Xander Bogaerts left the Red Sox and signed with the San Diego Padres. And you know, on our last episode, we were talking about David Pastrnak and the fact that he's still not signed to an extension. And it's just a reminder that, like, if you let one of your guys get to the open market, anything can happen. Because I think it seems that there was a good story in the Globe written by Julian McWilliams that it seems like Chaim Bloom was, like, legitimately caught off guard that the Padres went to that number, 11 years, $280 million for a 30-year-old shortstop. But it's like, yeah, but you let them get to the open market, and that's what you risk. You risk one team just going above and beyond.
Or being straight up stupid, like giving you a stupid deal that doesn't make sense financially for really anyone, including the Padres. So, like, you risk someone coming in and just, for whatever reason, deciding this is what they want to do, and there's no way to counter an offer like that.
Yeah. Well, exactly. That's what happened. Like, if you open the door for other teams to be able to negotiate, someone can do that. And you can say, like, well, that's not reasonable, or, you know, it would be dumb to go that many years or whatever. But that's, hey, you had, you know, all the time in the world to negotiate exclusively with the player yourself. And look, obviously hockey's different because no one can swoop in with an 11-year deal. Like, the, you know, Bruins can offer 8 to Pastrnak, and no one else can offer more than 7. There's also, you know, there's no $280 million deals in hockey. Like, very different sports. But it's like, if the Bruins are sitting there thinking, well, 11.5, $12 million a year for Pastrnak might be reasonable, but, you know, we wouldn't really want to go more than that. Well, all it takes is one other team to swoop in free agency and say, you know what, we'll give him 13.5 a year. We'll make him the, or, you know, maybe even more, like, we'll make him the highest paid forward in the league. It only takes one. So,
yeah. And it could be like a very non fiscally responsible team that just, like, I don't know, they just, for whatever reason, have cap space now, and they're going to have to figure it out down the line. You just never know. Like, they could come out of left field. And that, I had a very similar thought when I saw the news this morning, which was, first of all, wow, I guess I'm gonna have a bad day now. And second of all, like, this is exactly what happens when you, even if it seems like they're close, like, it seems like the Bruins and Pastrnak are close, at least from what we hear. But if you, even up until what I heard this morning, which was even up until, like, this was finally, like, Xander made his final decision, he was, like, still wanted to talk to the Red Sox and still wanted to be like, hey, this is the offer, guys. Like, you still interested? Even if he does want to stay in Boston, it's hard to turn down a deal that just, like, doesn't make any sense. That's, like, it's in favor of you so much that it almost doesn't make sense.
Well, as it pertains to the comparison between baseball and hockey, like Scott mentioned, the biggest difference between what the Red Sox offered Bogarts and what, you know, the Padres and presumably two or three other teams in front of the Red Sox did was, you know, the difference was term. AAV, the Red Sox are right there. And, you know, the term is something that the Bruins, like Scott mentioned, they have the advantage on. But, you know, the sentiment that, you know, anything can happen in free agency is very valid. Like, you know, are there certain – with the cap the way that it is, you know, anybody trying to win a Stanley Cup in the next couple of years, probably because their roster is decent enough, they likely don't have, you know, the cap space really to offer something stupid to Pastrnak, like $13 million or something. But you never know. And, you know, there's other reasons, other intangibles that certain teams will do this. Like, say, look at the Arizona Coyotes, for example, right? A team that nobody is even thinking about with when it comes to David Pastrnak. But you're talking about a team who might be trying to, win over the good graces of a fan base that has to watch him, and albeit in a pretty cool environment. And I'm looking forward to it on a
I mean, that is if Arizona stays in Arizona and they don't sell it somewhere else.
Right, but like, you know, if you're the Coyotes, like you're talking about a team that's playing in a college arena and they have a ton of cap space, they're a basement dweller. You know, would they be willing to sign Pastrnak at really high AAV from a marketing perspective to get a star, and also banking on these digital ads that we have to endure every single goddamn
game? And you think Pasta wants to play at a rink that's got 5,000 fans?
No, but I think that if they're building a brand new arena and they offer him the most amount of money and the cap goes up in a couple of years because of all these digital ads, no, I don't think it would happen. I'm just saying, to Scott's point, anything can happen, and you know, it's you just don't want it to get there. Now, unfortunately, like we've talked about, it's not necessary. For all we know, it's not necessarily the Bruins that are going to take it that far. Like, the Bruins could offer him a lot, but you just, and it could be Pastrnak's camp that encourages him to take it to free agency. So
exactly, and that's the thing that you like, that's why the Bruins are probably trying their hardest, and I think have been throughout the offseason, to just put, you know, pen to paper and let the ink dry and actually have it figured out, because there's another comparison between the two players as well, which is that they're like the faces, right? So Bogarts was intended to be like the long-term face of the Red Sox. Pastrnak is one of the most likable players in the NHL and somebody that most people in Boston recognize, even if they're not everyday Bruins fans. So you're talking about two guys that you want to build your team around that also have a lot of value to other teams. So it's just like, you can see the comparisons, and that's why it's unsettling. And that's why it just brings the thought to your mind.
Yeah. And I think it highlights, like, at the very least, you have to make like a truly competitive offer if you really want to keep the guy, so that you don't have that regret. Because look, maybe the Red Sox are lying and they really never intended to keep Bogarts or, you know, sign him to a long-term deal. But like, based on like all the reporting, their best offer was 6 years, $160 million. And it's like, now they have to live with wondering, like, what if last spring training they offered Bogarts 8 years, $210 million? Like, would that have gotten it done? And if they really are like devastated that they lost him, like, they have to live with that regret, knowing that their best offer wasn't really competitive. So I guess, you know, to bring that to the Bruins, it's like, again, we don't know where they are now. We don't know what they've offered, but like, if say the best offer they've made so far is 8 years, $10.5 million a year, which is a pretty solid offer. You know, I think would have been seen as a nice offer going into the year, but now with the season Pastrnak's having, I think pretty much everyone's on the same page that like Pastrnak's going to get at least 11. Like, that's a starting point, and it's probably gonna be more than that if he keeps playing like this. So at some point, say as you get towards the trade deadline, if you're the Bruins and you really want to keep Pastrnak, like, you're going to have to come in at least $11.5 million a year, or maybe go to 12. And like, yeah, that might be stretching it a little further than you are comfortable with, but if you don't do that, then you're going to risk what the Red Sox just went through, which is he goes to free agency, someone offers more, and he decides to take it, and you have to, and then you're left with that regret of like, damn, like what if we had offered a little more a little earlier? So, you know, we don't know all the details of what's going on between the Bruins and Pastrnak. Maybe they have offered him, you know, 8 by 11.5 or 12 already. But we haven't heard that reported. So, you know, I guess like the ultimate takeaway is just if the Bruins really want to keep Pastrnak at some point this season, probably by the trade deadline, like you're going to have to make real serious competitive offer that at least gets you, you know, very close to like what the number might end up being.
Yeah. And like, I think personally, I think that if it went to free agency and, you know, somebody offered Pastrnak, you know, a little bit higher of a higher AAV than the Bruins do, and then you cancel out the extra year the Bruins can offer and whatever that comes out to, I do think Pastrnak would still probably stay in Boston depending on how much of a difference it is. Cause I don't think he would like, if the Bruins offered 11.5 and then one team offered him 12, but for a less year, cause they can only go to 7. Like, I don't think Pastrnak would necessarily go just because it was technically higher. Like, I think there are intangibles that he would be like, all right, well, but your point, Scott, is that you don't want it to get to that point. Like, you want the Bruins, when they have exclusive negotiating rights, to get it done. And yeah, so, you know, we'll see how it plays out. Now, did you guys happen to notice, and also, you know, I guess my closing thought based off of what I said last episode, like my gut is telling me he's going to stay here for all the reasons we talked about, you know, future of the leadership core and, you know, carrying the torch that was passed to him. Now, did you guys happen to notice in the last Behind the Beat, it was after the Bruins beat Tampa, it was Bergeron's 1,000th point. Did you happen to notice the guys kind of, you know, in jest, but maybe not so much in jest, kind of getting a one more year chant going? And I don't know. There are certain things you don't necessarily, I would say, joke about out of respect for, like, you know, somebody's decision. It's almost kind of like it's maybe like they know Bergeron might not be necessarily done after this year, and they felt the green light to kind of joke about it. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. I think like that's probably kind of a fair assessment. It's like the team's so close that, like, yeah, they can, and you know, Bergeron's not going to be caught off guard by like guys saying, hey, we want you to stay and not retire. And to your point, like I don't think Bergeron has told anyone that this is his last year, and I don't think he's even made that decision yet. So
no, I don't think he's made a decision yet either. Just like this previous off season.
Well, if he were to stay another year and somehow Pastrnak finds it out, it would be another incentive because it's another year with Bergeron, right? So, and that takes away one of the years that are in question as far as the future of the team and can they win. If you know Bergeron's coming back next year, if you're Pastrnak, well, at least the first year of your next extension, the team would still be for sure very competitive. I thought that was an interesting tidbit. You're right, Scott. I guess the big takeaway is that one thing we know is that he definitely hasn't told his teammates that he's done, and that this is a farewell tour, under the radar farewell tour, which is it's for all we knew, the team was leaving it out all on the ice every single night because they knew it was his last year for certain. And that's just who they are. They're working hard this year, so it's not necessarily because it's Bergeron's last year. Did you guys have anything else before we? You guys aren't traveling to Arizona State for the game, are you?
No. I wish, but no.
How much are tickets to that? I didn't even look. I would imagine they are because there's such a low quantity that you have to pay a lot to get there. Weird.
Well, and they have a lot of seats. Not that they sold out 17,000 seats at JoeBing.com Arena, wherever the hell they played before. But you know, you are missing potential gate of what, you know, 14 or 13,000 seats or whatever it is, 12,000 seats. So they got to make up for it somehow. I mean, I think the students get a discount though.
Like, and I'm sure you're going to have Bruins fans in Arizona, you know, battling for some of those tickets too. Like, look at that crowd in Denver last night. There were a lot of Bruins fans there.
What was that Marshawn quote? Because Marshawn said something last year about like how the Coyotes, like, they have however many seats, but they still have to give away you're still going to give away 5,000 tickets to fill it or something.
last night, Scott, to your point, like, look, are the Avalanche down some key guys? Yeah. But those tickets, you know, were purchased a long time ago. And you're talking about the defending Stanley Cup champions, and the entire lower bowl was black and gold. And the Bruins have had a traveling fan base for, you know, forever, but especially when they're good. You know, I don't know how many Bruins fans were traveling back in like 2006, but my point is that's the Colorado Avalanche. I guarantee you, if there's 5,000 seats at Arizona State, I guarantee you 4,000 of them are going to be Bruins fans. It'll look like the alumni game at Warrior Arena on Saturday. So it should be, but I'm looking forward to it. You know, obviously when the news broke this summer, it's like from a quality perspective. You know, is it National League, you know, facilities? Not what these guys are accustomed to, but I was floored when I saw that it's 3 years that they're playing here for. It's not like a 1 year thing. But I will say I was very much looking forward to this game because I think it's gonna be very cool to watch the Bruins in this type of setting. Very small college arena. So I'm looking forward to the broadcast for sure.
Okay, also, I think the quote was I just found the Marshawn tweet. It says the only way to get 5,000 fans at their games now is if they give 4,500 away for free. That was from January.
He's not wrong, or whoever the away team is, just have their fans travel.
Oh God!
Also, Friday night is a Nesson game, so we get to hear Jack Edwards, whatever he's gonna have to say about it.
Oh, I can't wait to hear Jack. I can't wait to hear Jack for the 27th time this season. Just randomly yell the Bun's on fire, whatever the hell that is that he says. I don't even know what he's saying, but it's just like, I don't know.
This is why I don't want to have a catchphrase for my broadcast.
But he's been broadcasting the Bruins games for 15 years, and I've never heard him say that until like last month, and he just can't stop saying it.
Freaking always says can of corn, and it drives me absolutely nuts.
There's a lot
Tumbling
of
Jack- muffin.
Tumbling oh, yeah. muffin.
There's a lot of Jackisms.
Things you'll never hear me say on a broadcast.
Coin that won't get tossed rolling home to you.
The only thing I like about Jack, it's like obviously he was talking a conversation last week for the Maroon stuff. Which oh by the way, more came out on that. And so Pat Maroon did an interview with Ryan Whitney and Paul Bissonnette on their Spit and Chicklets podcast. And I guess so in Fluto Shinzawa's Athletic article, he reached out to Jack for comment, and Jack basically didn't – well, not basically. There was no apology to Pat Maroon. Basically, he just said, like, you know, it's a long broadcast and I got to fill the time with something. And then he said, I did reach out to Tampa Bay to talk to Pat. And anyway, so on the Spit and Chicklets podcast, they asked him – or Pat Maroon brought that up. He did reach out to Tampa. But my PR told me that basically he just said, here's my cell phone and my email if Pat wants to reach out to me. And it's like, Maroon was like, well, why would he's like, no, like you should call me. Like I'm not gonna go out of my way to call Jack. So I don't know, like the whole situation, like, look, I'm not a cancel culture guy. Obviously, I definitely think Jack was it was just stupid because there was just no reason to go into that stuff. And you know, the other thing Maroon said was like, it wasn't even about me. I think he said this in a statement. He's like, it's not even about me. It's about like, you know, people like that might be home watching it that are out of shape, and Jack's just kind of whatever. Look, the whole situation, have your own opinion on it. But the
all I know is if I had said it, I'd probably be fired.
Well, if
I said it about like a college hockey player, or because I do men's and women's, like if it was like about a women's player, I would be fired so fast.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you just there are certain things you just don't want to touch. Like, there's just no reason to go there.
And usually, so bizarre. No,
like part of like when he was first doing it, part of me was like, I wonder if he has like some sort of relationship with Maroon, or like maybe they talked during the day, because the Nesson guys like do visit with the other team from time to time, and you know, there are certain players either through one connection or another that like they actually know pretty well. So I was like, you know, maybe it's like kind of like a, you know, friendly, you know, like making fun of my friend type thing, or someone I know kind of well, but clearly not. Like, clearly, no. Pat Maroon is just like, who is, like, what is he doing? Like, what the hell?
No, they've never spoken before. He said that Stamkos came to him in the shower after the game, and I guess some of the Lightning players saw it like during one of the intermissions, because like I think one of the
people were tweeting it. People were tweeting about
Well, their equipment, I think their equipment guys saw it, and they kind of told the team, but the players didn't tell Maroon because they didn't want to like set him off during the game. But then after the game, Stamkos told them, and whatever. I just think it's funny that like Jack doesn't even apologize, and then he just tells Tampa, yeah, look, it's a long broadcast, but here's my number if Maroon wants to call me. It's like, Jack, wow. Like, you're just so far off reality. But I don't know. When it comes to Jack, it's just like, all I tell myself is like, when I watch the Bruins broadcast, it's just like, Jack, can you please just call the game? Like, there's a time and a place to like have conversation. Just call the game in front of you. And I don't want to, I'm questioning going here, because I don't know if it's like, you never know if there's like something going on behind the scenes, but his diction and his pace of talking this year has just been like really robotic and slow. And like, he's like he says everybody's name like it's 10 syllables, even when he said the name already a million times in the broadcast. And like, he's not talk like us three are talking like this, like normal. Like, he talks with Jack normally too, but like, I mean, with Brick, but in the games lately, it's just been like, you know, like an example would be Pasternak to Krejci, who moves it up to Zaka. It's like Pasternak moves it to Krejci to Zaka. Like, why are you talking like that? And I didn't want to go here because maybe it could be something that like we don't know about, but I would find it hard to believe that he'd be on, I don't know. So look, Jack is a polarizing guy. Just call the game and cut the BS, please, because you're one of a kind, but it's not necessarily always endearing. So it's a long season is my point. So just please.
I thought the Vegas game, especially that third period as they're coming back, I thought Jack was good. Like, you could tell he was kind of like raising the level, and like his, you know, excitement level, his voice was like going up, and it was like, I don't know, maybe he just needs like more good games, like more games close in the third period or something.
Well, yeah, we all sound good when the game's good.
Yeah. Maybe the key is like, just, you can't have like bored Jack. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, he's definitely, he's, you listen to other broadcasts around the league, and there are so many play-by-play individuals who are just like really monotone, and like, there's just no energy and there's nothing. It's just like I saw a highlight of somebody on Twitter, like said, like the Colorado Avalanche broadcaster must be really mad, cause like they showed the Bruins goals against Colorado and Boston, and his call was like, you know, whatever, McAvoy to Zaka to McAvoy to Frederick, score. Like, you know, it's like, there's just like nothing there. It's very monotone. And Jack, obviously, when he's engaged and when he's, you know, keeping it between the lines, he has a ton of passion and a ton of energy, and it's great. Despite,
Brian, you want to be my broadcast partner?
I could try. I'm not good at, I don't know how it would be at play by play if you want to do the play by play. But I can certainly do color if you want, but you know, no Jackisms. But when Jack keeps it between the lines, he's really good.
And then Brian says that, and then he'll come on and make some like pun about like the kitchen sink or the cupboard or something. And then I'll roll my eyes at you and turn your mic off.
Yeah. I don't know how punny I would be on TV, but in any event, probably spoke enough about Jack. I don't even know how that came up, but because the Arizona,
you,
well, no, it was you. You brought up the
Arizona. No, actually, I did. I brought up Jack in Arizona.
All right, so we'll blame Scott. All right. If you guys have anything else, speak now or forever hold your peace. But I think we're probably good to wrap this one up, right?
Mm-hmm. We didn't touch on it, but Tage Thompson of the Sabres scored 5 goals last night.
Oh my God.
It was insane.
The Sabres were up 6-0 after the first period, almost 7-0. It's like,
by the way, old friend Sean Corrali took 4 penalties in the first period. That didn't help matters.
No, it did not.
That's I don't know how the hell you let yourself go down 6-0 in the first period to anybody.
I think you just chalked that one up as an L. All right, well, can we go home now?
Yeah, well, Columbus has taken a lot of L's this year. Talk about a team that's just like, there's nothing there. I mean, you bring in Goudreau and Laine. I mean, Laine was, you know, trading uppercuts with Matthews for the first couple of years of their career. And he's just fallen off a cliff. And Johnny Goudreau is just kind of like, I mean, obviously he's, you know, crazy talented, but, you know, by himself, I don't know how effective he is in this league anymore, or at least on Columbus. I don't know. But yeah, they're struggling. So
they don't play defense. Like, that's a team that, like, you know, obviously they're a few years removed from it now, but like, they miss having a leader like Nick Foligno, like someone who would set the tone. Like, that there's no leadership there. That they don't play defense. It's, you know, Gaudreau and Laine, it's like, those are guys who want to score and play offense, but like, they're not setting any sort of tone or any sort of foundation. Just a mess. Like, I didn't have them making the playoffs, but they were one of those teams that, you know, we thought might potentially be able to like push. You know,
turns out it was the Devils instead of
the Devils and the Red Wings are hanging around. Like, they're a team that's kind of made that jump and closed that gap.
Yeah.
And the Islanders, and it's, you know, maybe we can do this more on another pod because we've already run too long, but it is exciting that we seem to have actual playoff races this year. Like, I feel like last year by this point, we already knew the 8 teams that were going to make it in the East.
Yep.
And this year, you know, there's at least like 10, 11 teams that are all kind of there.
Well, even in the Atlantic, like, you know, I think, you know, obviously Boston and Toronto will be there. Tampa will be there at the end, but you know, that wild card spot, that fourth spot. Yeah. I mean, like, you already mentioned it, but like, Detroit's hanging around, Montreal's hanging around, Florida's like not that great. I mean, they're okay. Big drop off out in the Metro. Washington, I think Washington has like, what, 10 wins this year or something like that. Like, they've had injuries, but
yeah, they're 12-4. They're 4 points behind the Islanders for 4th. Mm.
Yeah, no. So there will be a lot of playoff races. So yeah, definitely topic of conversation going forward and throughout the year. We'll keep those in mind. And you know, there's some good scoring races too. Like, I don't know if anybody had, you know, Jason Robertson trading blows with McDavid all year. I mean, obviously, you know, really good player, young player, broke out on the scene last year with like 70 something points, but he's quite the story too. So. A lot to keep. It's not monotonous. It's not the same old. Yeah, McDavid's still up there, and yeah, there's some top teams, but the parity is kind of showing this year, so it's fun to follow. That said, we're gonna wrap this one up now, and we're gonna follow the Bruins in Arizona on Friday, and then I think we'll be back on Sunday after the game against Vegas, the rematch against Vegas. Which, if Vegas is wearing their gold uniforms, that might be a pretty ugly uniform matchup. That's going to be not a sight for sore eyes. You got gold jerseys, like literal gold jerseys. And then, you know, the Bruins have black and yellow, which it's not really a great contrast, but hopefully they go with their grays or something like that. So anyway, thank you all for listening. That was a quick fashion segment, Bridget.
That's really quick. Got in and out.
That was like a toll booth fashion segment. thank you guys for listening, and we will talk soon.